This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiologists' extended learning series featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You're about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, you will have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access to your mobile device. And each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/AXL. Listen now to a conversation Ralph Brandis had with Christopher Kramer and Ruth Heady, professor of cardiology and professor of radiology and director of the cardiovascular medicine with the non-invasive cardiovascular imaging department at the University of Virginia. They cover coronary revascularization. Ischemia and viability by CMR should guide revascularization.
Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Ralph.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Now, you had an interesting debate yesterday on coronary revascularization, ischemia and viability by CMR. Tell us a little bit about how we can use CMR for diagnosing ischemia.
Certainly. So, yes, the debate was, I was pro in terms of putting forth the case why CMR should be used for this, and Jim Min from Cornell presented the case for CT angiography with FFR assessment. So with CMR, we have techniques to assess both ischemia and viability. In terms of ischemia, the test that we do primarily now is first pass contrast enhanced stress perfusion CMR using adenosine or regadenosin and infused gadolinium contrast during the vasodilator stress, looking for perfusion of the heart muscle, and then again at rest 10 or 15 minutes later and look at the difference between stress and rest to assess for the presence of ischemia. That test has a very high accuracy for ischemia in the high 80s for sensitivity and specificity. It's been studied, well studied. A single center study from Leeds in the UK against SPECT a few years ago showed that it was significantly better at predicting obstructive disease by quantitative coronary angiography at catheterization. Now we have a multi-center study, not just looking at comparison to cath, but actually measuring outcomes. It's a study called MR-INFORM that was presented 2 years ago, late-breaking trials at this meeting, and now is working its way through, should be in press at New England Journal very soon. It's a study of nearly 1,000 patients randomized to a cath-guided approach with coronary angiography plus FFR. So half the patients went directly to cath, had revascularization based on FFR in the cath lab. The other half of the patients underwent a so-called MR-informed approach where they underwent stress CMR, and if there was ischemia on the stress CMR, they then went to cath. As it turned out, the patients in the stress CMR group, fewer needed revascularization or underwent revascularization than in the cath and FFR guided group. In the end, with 2 or 3 year follow-up, outcomes were identical. So essentially, the non-invasive approach using CMR for identifying ischemia did as well as going directly to the cath lab with FFR measurements.
Well, Chris, that's a huge feather in the cap for the approach using CMR. It's, you know, we always typically talk in looking about imaging techniques related to sensitivity or specificity, predictive value. But here you have an outcomes trial showing huge efficacy for this. What about the issue about the safety of gadolinium? Should we be worried about this as clinicians? What's new in that area?
Yeah, I think the main issue is in patients with stage 4 or 5 chronic kidney disease with GFRs less than 30. We still generally avoid using gadolinium contrast in those patients, although even in those patients being recognized that the agents that we use now as opposed to agents we used several years ago, which are now macrocyclic agents as opposed to linear agents, which we were using 5 and 10 years ago. It turned out that the linear agents were more likely to release the gadolinium from their chelation, and that's where patients with end-stage renal disease got in trouble because the unchelated gadolinium was circulating and not being excreted. Now with the macrocyclic agents, they remain chelated and they're excreted safely. So we're all using nothing but macrocyclic agents, and we're still avoiding gadolinium in those with GFRs less than 30.
Oh, perfect. So what about the issue of viability?
Again, CMR is an excellent technique for assessment of viability in patients with ischemia, LV dysfunction, ischemic cardiomyopathy, assessing likelihood of recovery of function after revascularization. We actually have three techniques at our disposal. End-diastolic wall thickness has been shown by echo and other techniques previously is useful. Very thin walls, very low likelihood of recovery of function once your wall is less than about 5.5 millimeters thick. But the technique that we use primarily is late gadolinium enhancement. So when we image the heart muscle 10 to 20 minutes after infusing gadolinium, we use a technique that nulls the signal in normal myocardium. So normal myocardium appears black, and areas of scar or fibrosis from whatever the cause, it can be infarction, it could be other infiltrative cardiomyopathies, whatever's causing the scar appears bright white, and it's quite readily accessible. And it's been shown in a number of studies that the transmural extent of contrast enhancement on late gadolinium-enhanced CMR correlates with the likelihood of recovery of function. So the transmurality of infarction relates to recovery. So if you have no infarct in a territory and LV dysfunction, there's about an 80% likelihood that that segment will recover after revascularization. If you have more than 50% transmural enhancement in a given segment, there's low likelihood of recovery. So on either end of the spectrum, that late gadolinium enhancement is very useful. It's interesting in the segments with subendocardial infarction, so 1 to 50% transmurality, the anatomy alone does only a modest job at predicting recovery of function. It's in those segments or patients with many of those segments, you can actually use low-dose dobutamine contractile reserve to look at, which improves upon the predictive value in those subendocardial infarcts between 1 and 50% transmurality. So combining the beauty of a CMR is that combining the anatomy with the physiology improves upon the predictive value. But in general, because it's a bit cumbersome to do low-dose dobutamine, we generally stick to using the wall thickness plus late gadolinium enhancement approach in most patients.
Well, I have to say I'm very impressed that UCSF and their utilization of CMR, probably based on all the issues you just discussed related to the ability to determine viability and diagnosing ischemia in terms of making wise decisions who we should revascularize. So where does CT fit into this equation, and what questions should we be asking to figure out whether we should be doing CT or CMR?
Yeah, I think, you know, the question in our debate was deciding on revascularization, and that's where the issue of ischemia and viability becomes so important. What is CT best at? CT angiography, with or without FFR, is best at excluding coronary disease in patients at low to intermediate risk. The negative predictive value of CT is 99%. When the CT is normal, you can tell that patient, if it's truly normal, that they do not have coronary disease, and there's almost a 10-year warranty on that. The other strength of CT is identifying non-obstructive coronary disease. As we know from the Scott Heart trial, which was published last year in the New England Journal, patients randomized to an ECG approach or standard ECG stress testing versus the CT approach, the patients in the CT group had more identification of non-obstructive disease, more often got on aspirin and statins, and at 5 years had better outcomes, primarily due to fewer myocardial infarctions. So that's where CT's strength is, both in ruling out coronary disease and identifying non-obstructive coronary disease, improving outcomes that way. Not necessarily identifying disease that requires revascularization, where the question more is that territory ischemic? And if it is, and it's previously infarcted, is it likely to recover with revascularization?
Well, Chris, this has been incredibly helpful for me to understand when I should be utilizing CMR versus CT and also the incredible value. Maybe the last question, what are some of the challenges for our practicing clinicians related to issues of pre-authorization or cost, and how does this fit into their armamentarium?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. Yeah, CMR remains less available to some clinicians because of just not available in their institution or what have you. But I think that's changing as more folks are getting trained in CMR. Cost for CMR is higher certainly than CT, but very similar to a spec MPI. The issue of pre-authorization is a problem for both for CMR and CTA. Now with the advent of FFR, insurers are becoming more likely to pay for CTA because the FFR has cut down on the number of false positives that can be a problem due to blooming of calcium on CT angiography.
Well, that was terrific. Chris, thanks so much for being here and helping us and our colleagues understand the issues related to CMR.
Thanks for having me.
This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/Axel.